Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Alami podcast, Change Your Company. I'm very excited about our episode today. We're going to talk about change. We're going to talk about transformation, and we're going to talk about the people aspect of change and transformation and the challenges that organizations have, especially large organizations, when driving such a change. My guest today is Simon Retailleau, Vice President Digital Twins for Smart Infrastructure in Siemens. And he has a vast experience leading transformation for agility and for what else was the focus of your work, Simon?
I'd say portfolio management was quite in its large terms, an activity I've been working on.
Yeah. So this kind of experience in the corporate world is priceless because it exposes you to so many challenges which are amplified, which are much bigger than in small organizations. And so how do you reflect on your journey? How do you tell us a little bit about your experience leading transformation, leading change in the corporate world?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, really, thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm honored, and it's nice to be able to talk about those very important topics of change and transformation. It's been a very interesting journey. In the previous, I would say, part of my career, I was more on the execution side of a business. And, you know, you have KPIs on which you deliver, and you have your budget and your P&L responsibility and all. And when I switched to Siemens, I found that, you know, I was quite encouraged to being a change agent. And there are a lot of things that can be changed, not for the sake of changing itself, but really for the sake of making things better for our customers internally, for the people we work with. And I found that absolutely exhilarating to work on those topics, right? It came a bit as a surprising challenge in the sense I was maybe not geared to do so. So there was a lot of learning in the process. But really fantastic people around, fantastic ideas also on what we could do differently, what we could change, and why we would do it, which is always a critical element of change. So in a very short nutshell, this is it. Again, on a few years, there is so much content and learning, which is always interesting to discuss about.
So let's start with this. Why change?
Yeah, it's a very good point. And I think this is the first question ever we should ask, right? Why? You know, before saying how we do that, why do we do it? And I think it's always important to reflect on what we have. Some would say when things go bad, it's time for change. I would say it's also good to change when things go well. It might be even better to do so when things go well.
Yeah.
But obviously, there are, you know, some roadblocks around. We need to find a good, I would say, a good reason again why we need to change. You know, what fundamentally could be done differently, either by looking internally at what we do and maybe could be optimized, or looking outside and seeing what other companies or other different organizations, doesn't have to be always in the business world, how they work, why they do it, and what is the outcome. Mm-hmm.
So I think there is a quote by Jack Welch. He says something like, change before you have to. And I love it. I love it because it's really kind of if this is the mindset in organizations that leaders are always driving change for improvement, for transformation, for taking their teams, for taking their people to new levels, I think you will have a very vibrant and dynamic organizations, and you will have a great product, you will have a great performance, you will have a great workplace. There is never being satisfied with status quo. I think this is so powerful, and that's what we need more in organizations today. So it's a great like to dive a bit deeper now and just talk about like one aspect of driving a change, which is alignment. And my experience in creating or driving alignment in large organization was that, you know, there is a big gap between the senior leadership and the vision, strategy, goals, and even values and the frontline. And this is based on a lot of different things. Some of it is because of communication, some of it because of the, you know, physical distance, some of it is because of like the different kind of skills and the cultures and all kind of things are influencing this. But when we were talking, you mentioned about also this fact that the frontline being close to the customers and the leadership in a way is not that close. So tell me more about this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the part you reflect upon is very interesting. I certainly face that, and I'm sure a lot of people who talk about change or try to activate on change in their company really face this as well, right? And I think there is that typically for change, there is a call coming from the top. And let's talk about this agility. I'm sure sometime within Siemens, the top was saying we want to change towards agility because we want to be more customer centric, because we want to be faster in going to market, because ta-da-da. And as things cascade down into the organization, you lose a lot of that because. And everything you get eventually is we need to be agile, right? So as that hits, in a way, the different layers in the organization, I'm not for hierarchy here, but just a reality of things that, you know, communication goes layer by layer, then you lose a bit of that why we talked about before. And in that process of implementing the change, quite a few other things come into action as roadblocks or potentially and hopefully as catalysts. And one of the things I observed, you know, in addition to what you're saying here, is that there is a certain culture of promoting people internally within Siemens because of expertise, which is not bad at all. And don't misunderstand me. It's actually quite a normal thing to do. And it's good to have people that are knowledgeable and experts going up and being promoted to take further responsibility. But I found, interestingly, there are some adverse effects to that as well. So let me give you a few examples here. I think that would be clearer. So for instance, imagine you're really the expert in a certain type of product and you're promoted to being in charge of all those products from a business point of view. You're the most knowledgeable expert in the organization. Who is the best place to make decisions on that product? Who is the best place, individual, to decide what should be done as the next increment or, you know, innovation in that product range? Well, you are, right? You're the expert. Now, if we look at how that business should evolve really in the best possible way, and there is a ton of literature around that, obviously, it's through customer centricity, like no question. Right? So you need to have the voice of the customer, not just as what they want to do now, what they think they need, but looking into the problems they have in the business and how we can help solve that. Right? So you need that voice of the customer fundamentally at the center of your reasoning. And that somehow does not align with having the experts sitting quite far from the customer typically and making decisions on, you know, what the product, where the product should develop. So that's already something I noticed, if you wish, when we were trying to become more agile. Because from the top, there was this wish to have a process in place, you know, to make things faster, but yeah, not really fundamentally changing the way we approach innovation and we approach what the agility is meant to facilitate and make faster, which really should be customer centricity.
Yeah, yeah. And this is something which is in my doctorate research, I looked at innovation and how, you know, users actually, so the customers in that case, are like a great source of innovation. So they innovate even by themselves. And the idea is to create a space for them to innovate. But in our case, what we are talking about here is these people who are in direct contact with the customers, who are very close to the customers, they have a lot of insights. And that's why we need to create a space for them to be able to influence the decisions that being taken in the organization. So it's aligned with the customer needs. It's aligned with their solving their challenges. And that's why, you know, today in organizations, there are so many tools today which allow people to contribute, to involve them, like even the frontline, even in a huge organization, there are so many possibilities to involve people in the process of contributing to the decisions. Do you agree with this?
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. And it's really something I've observed. And it's difficult to fight against that, if I may say, when you try to change, because this is so deeply rooted in the culture of the organization, or maybe even the pride of people having been in that position of expertise and so on. What we see, though, is that, you know, everything is evolving so fast now. Things are changing really fast, whether it's competition, new entrants in that market, or even the technology, which is dictating new uses of technology, of products, of whatever, platforms and so on. Ecosystems are part of that. Partnership is part of that. And again, maybe back to that point of having the boss as the expert, there comes something which is a bit fascinating. It's that that individual may have been on top of the game, say, 5 years back, when he or she was in charge of the business or the product, and maybe at the time facing customers. But now it's not the case maybe any longer. And there are other people that are close to the customer whose voice should be really heard, like we said. So it's also, I mean, what I've observed really in portfolio management in that respect is that the portfolio managers somehow relied on the decision of the expert boss. They did not want to challenge so much that direction which is given by the boss. And therefore, they don't really think to challenge that and go back to customers to validate hypotheses and to get something different. And you find out that at some point, your product management roadmap is fixed for the next 5 years on assumptions or hypotheses that are maybe no longer valid. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's again, not just to point at the fact, you know, promoting the expert is a bad thing, which is absolutely not. There is a sort of environment that is created by that, and somehow it's really adverse to what agility is meant to be. And again, this is something quite difficult to change, right? But interestingly enough, there are a lot of people to talk to, a lot of people willing to understand that as well, and to take a new journey, which is, like you and I discussed quite a few times, this is the beauty of change management and being a change agent. Yeah. A lot of things and a lot of people to talk to, a lot of learning.
Yeah. I think what you just said now about the mindset is, I think this is the biggest obstacle, because we might say the skills also, but starting with the mindset, which is, look, I really want to involve my people who are close to the customers in the decisions because they know more than I do, because they are closer to the reality of the market. And once there's this mindset, then figuring out how to do it is somehow easier. And of course, again, we need to have the skill set, which is listen, to reflect, to challenge, to ask questions, to do all this, but starting with the mindset. And then the power of today, what's available virtually, is you can get like within 1 hour insights from everyone in the organization around the topic. You can have it in a very rich way. You can have it in a video. You can have it in an audio. You can have it in a picture. You can have it. So you can get a video call, and then you have a breakout and have really discussion around like a challenge or an issue or the customer is facing. And this is the beauty of what's available today. So, but the question is, it's not if it's available or not. It's the question is, are some of the leaders open enough to go in that direction, to involve in lower part of the organizations and to tap on their intelligence, to tap on their insights when taking these decisions?
Absolutely, yeah. So like you say, having an environment for that communication to take place is really fundamental, whether it's a platform, a certain type of meeting, a place where decisions are visible, and you know, there is really transparency as to what we do and what we don't do. Because really fundamentally, there will always be an issue or, say, a limitation because of resources available, be it budget or people, right, or time. And there are just too many things that could be done. And everyone who has an idea, for sure, this is a good idea to them, and maybe it's a good idea overall, but we cannot do it all. I recall there's this quote from, I think, Steve Jobs talking about focus, right? Saying that focus is not saying yes to the one thing you want to do. It's saying no to the 100 other things you will not do eventually. And it does matter, especially in times of change, to be specific about, again, we said why we change, what to change, but also what will not change. You know? And same goes for portfolio management or innovation. There are things we will do, things we will not do. And it's important for everyone who is interested to have access to a place where those decisions are fairly clearly stated.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the biggest obstacle I see when it comes to saying no to a lot of things, I notice that some leaders, they have challenged saying no because they are worried if they, you know, if they do so later on, it will be a mistake, right? And I think, and here where you need to take kind of decisions, and some of the decisions, they have consequences. But the idea of going, for example, with 25 different initiatives at the same time, and I've seen this, something like this happen, and trying to make progress in all of them, it exhausts the organization. It mm-hmm. exhausts it, like, and then you would not be able to have like big impact. And that's why, I mean, you mentioned Steve Jobs. I remember like reading from his biography by, forgot the name, the guy of who wrote it. But basically he said that when they were doing the iPhone, the iPad idea was much earlier. They had the idea early, but they kind of parked it because they realized that if they want to have great success with the product they were working on, they need to stop or put something on the side and give all the power on this. And another example is when he came back to Apple and like they had like all kind of products. And I, this story is like fascinating. So everyone's like talking about, we need to do this, we need to do this. So they had like, I don't know what, they were getting into so many different product lines. And then he stood up, he went to the board, he said like, you know, everyone listen to me here. This is what we're gonna do. And he drew like a matrix with four boxes, personal, professional, desktop, laptop. That's it. I said, this is what we're gonna do and that will be it. We're not gonna do anything else. And they, you know, in that story, it says like the whole room went crazy. You're gonna kill the company, you're gonna do this. I said, no, this is what we're gonna do. And this is the power of focus in a way.
Absolutely. And the power of having a strategy as well. I think exactly. When you don't have that to guide the organization, not only having this North Star, but also some guardrails on the side to tell you what to not do, then a company is not strategic. It could be at best tactical, but more typically it would be opportunistic. And that's really a risk long term, even short term sometimes, but certainly long term. Again, I could reflect on that because portfolio management is fairly meaningless if you don't have this direction from a strategy. Portfolio management, you do implement the strategy. Exactly, so you need that strategy to begin with. Which is very interesting.
You need to have the strategy. You need to have the why. You need to explain the people the why. And we talked about it, how important it is to really engage people, to motivate them. So when you explain to them like why we're doing it, it creates this engagement. It creates this motivation. But you mentioned something about Kanban, which is this concept, or this tool, which is used during transformation. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, sure. So Kanban is a Japanese term that means billboard. So it's nothing but a table, and there are different ways to use that. I would not say it's maybe specific to transformation. It's certainly strong with agility, but it can be used in many different ways, whether it's tasks within a team or it's product innovation or you know, whatnot. I'm sure there are many ways to use that because it's only a table, yet again, you know, a billboard. And in portfolio management, on top of your product innovation, you have ways to use that where the different columns from left to right represent the different stages where your innovation is, from a funnel, which is just the ideation, into a more, I would say, deeper review and analysis. Then you have a place where you have your backlog. So the ideas that are validated would sit in here, and then they would be moved when capacity is available for development, for validation hypothesis, and so on, until at some point you're done, whatever you have that definition of done. And it could be really a physical board, so with sticky notes, you know, on a wall, so that visually people can see and move those sticky notes from left to right as the topic or the task or the product is evolving. There are also fantastic tools, and there are plenty of those online, right? So in a meeting, you can share that and see where we are, go deeper into what is the content of that one specific sticky note you're looking at, make decisions on it and state those decisions as well, very importantly. Descriptions are here, the stakeholders, and so on. And that can be visible to anyone outside of that maybe specific meeting, so where the decisions are made and the stickies are moved. So really anyone interested in understanding what's happening in development and in innovation could just go in there, have a look, and know what's happening. It requires a bit of a work, obviously, for any stakeholder interested to look into that, to understand what happened, because it's a fairly dynamic table. You don't necessarily have a report of, oh, this one moved from here, from this column to that column. It's a bit more demanding than that at times, but that's also, you know, a very important element of communication. We talked a bit about that before. Communicating about the why, what's happening, who is involved, and so on is critical. But obviously, showing progress throughout is important, and such a tool is a super powerful element of communication as well.
Yeah. So I think, of course, the concept is, or the tool itself, there are similar maybe tools. But what I like about what you're giving as an example of this tool is that it create like one central place where there is one version of the reality, right? Or like it's one single version, not like different version. There's one place, and everyone can go to that place and see, you know, where we are and what happened before, what's gonna happen in the future. And it's available just in, they can see it at a glance. And this is so powerful. And this is what we need more of in organizations. There are so many, you know, emails spread here and there, so many documents here and there. You need to open like 5-6 things to get to know like what's the status. While the power is when you have everything, like you can see it right away in one place.
Absolutely. I mean, emails are good. It's always a good way of communicating, and it can reach a lot of people. Yeah. But I think too often communicating is thought as sending an email when the decision is taken.
Yeah.
And I don't believe this is what it should be, really. So such a billboard is a powerful tool yet again, and something which is really dynamic over time. There is one place where your truth at any point in time is located, which, for instance, you would never have with PowerPoint documents that, you know, are spread around and distributed in the organization, because those are only a snapshot at a certain point in the past, and they are clearly very early, very soon updated. And if anyone wanted to go back to where we stand now, it's difficult to find. So I'm a big fan of those. And again, Kanban or whatever, there are plenty of tools that help really visualize this dynamic evolution of where we stand. And I'm certainly a big fan of leveraging on those, but not only. I think emails at some point in time are needed. You can just make the snapshot of a report at the end of whatever, a month, or at the end of that one decision meeting where multiple decisions and multiple elements are taken. Then you can spread that to a different audience. that would not have time to look at the Kanban and search for, okay, which place moved or which sticky note moved from what column to what, you know?
Yeah. So you had an experience in leading throughout your journey without authority. Tell us a little bit about your experience being able to drive things forward without having the position or the authority to do so.
Yeah, sure. What I mean really by leading without authority is that the people that are affected by the change don't report to you from a purely hierarchical point of view. So maybe there are different ways to drive change in any organization. One is always possible, which is the top-down approach where, you know, the person sitting on top of the hierarchy says something and then it's cascading down and executed. It works. In some ways, it's efficient. I'm always a big fan of things working both ways, so top-down and bottom-up, so that you have a constant alignment. And there are a lot of different methodologies to achieve that, to also formalize it, because, you know, agility or any transformation should not be chaotic. There has to be structure in that as well. Right? And certainly is not contradicting each other. So for me, leading without authority was that, having people affected by the change not reporting hierarchically to you. It's a challenge in a way, because it could be so much simpler if, you know, you had that power behind you of the management position, and you say things and they're executed. I found it very interesting, challenging in quite a few ways, but also very interesting because it's an extreme case of stakeholder management. Right? You have to understand who is keen on changing and why they are keen on changing, who is not keen on changing and why, and who is maybe getting warm, but you need to work on that, which is something that through hierarchy, maybe you can, to some extent, at least ignore or bypass, right? And I think the power of a position working across an organization without that authority is exactly to reach really broadly and to prepare not only what has to be done now, but also what should be done later, who will be impacted by that later as things go, because those people can be in a very different organization eventually. Typically, you have, say, your product management and R&D organization somewhere that has to operate on that agile transformation, because this is where speed can be gained, really, going faster to market. Mm-hmm. But then you have a receiving end, be it the sales organization or a country organization, that has to be made aware also of what's happening. And you cannot lead that solely with authority, because then you have to go up to, I don't know, the CEO of the organization, right? So leading across and maybe creating credibility so that people appreciate what is done, see what is the benefit to them and to the other stakeholders they have at reach, be it, again, the customer or the sales organization or some developers in your R&D department. This is really essential, right?
Yeah. You mentioned something about how, you know, if you want to, you know, go back to the CEO of the organization. But actually, I remember I was running a global leadership program or co-leading it. And there was a CEO there in the room. And it was the start of the program. It was the evening. We're having dinner. And we were like saying a few words. And the CEO was saying a few words. I was saying a few words. And the leader of that program was saying a few words. And then I said, when I wanted to say something, I said, you know, this program, if you want to call it something, it's about influence. It's about influence. And I told him, like, what do you think when you move up in the organization? Do you have more, you know, need for authority, or like you have more abilities to drive things forward, like by telling people, or you need to have more influence? And I mean, some of them said, like, yeah, influence. And then actually the CEO raised his hand and he said, like, this is what my job is all about every day. It's about influence. I see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, and that's what's, you know, again, I mean, people think, I used to think the same. I remember before I had my first team leadership role, I was like, okay, when I become the boss, I will make everyone do like what needs to be done. And then you find that it's you're dealing with human beings. They need to be involved. They need to be listened to. They need to be motivated, engaged. I need to create an environment, enable them to do so. So that's it's a continuous challenge in organization, because we assume that we have the title, then we can drive things forward. But then it becomes all about stakeholder management. It's about developing relationships. It's about really having this, what they call the soft skills, which I'm not sure if they're really soft, they're critical and essential. So that's where it becomes so important to drive things forward.
Yeah, true. I like this term of influencing. And you know, if influencer was not so connected with Instagram or stuff like that,
yeah,
it would be an excellent term to use in an organization for change, because yeah, really exactly. That's what it is, right? Everyone. We use change agent. But yeah. What I like in influencing is that also you show example.
Exactly, right? Yeah. It has to be. And that's why in this case, leading without authority, character comes into play, you know. Like how you conduct yourself, how much you care about others will come into place. Because if you don't care about others and you're just kind of obsessed about the results, and you might get the result, but it will not be sustainable in a way. That's a challenge.
Absolutely true. So I like what you see or previously you were saying there, because that's really what it should be about.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, understanding what can be done, but how it can be done, and who to get on board here. And to me, again, that experience of that transformation and agility and portfolio management changes and all was really instrumental in my learning, because I think that's a brilliant skill to get, to know how to influence people without really that authority or thinking that if I say they will do, full stop. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe this is old school management that used to work, but obviously literature now is more and more talking about leadership, not management, and for very good reasons. Leading is not just saying, you know, it's about asking questions and understanding deeply what are the emotions at stake and what can be done to make that different and better.
Yeah. Well, I think it's not only literature, it's also the reality that we are living in today. I mean, it's crazy, because just 20 years, I mean, actually maybe 10 years ago, if I wanted to have a video conference, okay, with other colleagues from all over the world, and I worked in the corporate world, and we had like regional offices. So I was in the head office, a European head office. I have my colleague in the America's head office. And the only way we were able to be able to have a video conference was that they need to go to the main room in the head office, and I need to go to the main room, and we need to be on a time so we can, you know, see each other, and everyone in the team needs to come to this room, and then we would be able to have the video call. And which is, and also when you have like a, you know, meeting room with a meeting room, you know how the dynamics will play out, like not very effective, because there are so many things happening. But, and today you are able to do this like in a glance like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. Just 10 years ago, people to be able to record videos and send them to each other, it just like, it's almost, you know, impossible to do it in a practical way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can put Absolutely. It on a CD and send it, you know, or put it like on a, but then the way you need to, so now you are able to send it instantly. You know, you it's not only you can send it instantly, but you can get feedback instantly as well. You
Absolutely.
Can get a reaction, a comment. You can have hundreds of people. So this is where we are today. And this reality requires different way of approaching leadership, approaching even management, and interacting with our people. So, and that's why it's so important that we expand our view, expand our mindset, and develop the skill set. And also, every day there are some new tools. And honestly, we cannot afford it not being curious and experimenting with some of these, because they are so powerful and they can, to me, it's like a little bit, it's like, you know, you have a like neighborhood road, and then you have highway. And within the organization, you want to create more highways, because this is how people can connect quickly, like, and then get, you know, be close to each other and also take better decisions, quick decisions. So that's where I see it's becoming more and more a must in a way. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all about those tools and that fast communication, the possibility to reach also a lot of people across the globe at the same time, get that feedback as well, like you said. Oh, yeah, 100% yeah. Following you here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and there's this part which I love about that, that I see a lot with the younger people as well. Right? We talked a bit about that before. But younger generations, not that old myself, but I feel old saying that, the younger generation, younger people really are eager to see also in the corporate world what they are using in their daily life otherwise. I mean, those quick exchanges through video or through getting that feedback, and instant feedback, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's when we talked, you mentioned about how diversity, the idea of bringing young generation in, and because they'll bring fresh ideas, they will bring fresh perspectives. And now we're talking about bringing like some new tools. Mm-hmm. This is becoming also more and more important to drive our organizations forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I'm a big fan of really getting fresh blood in the organization. And it doesn't have to be just young people by age. Actually, age is irrelevant in that respect somehow, but also people from other organizations, and not just, again, the corporate world and so on. That diversity dimension is critical. It's to get really this fresh blood, if I may say again, and those new ideas and just a fresh eye on things so that they can challenge the status quo. Mm. If we are back to your quote from what was that, Jeff? Right? Jeff Immelt?
No, it was
Jack Welch.
Jack Welch,
right. Yeah. About the need to change now, not just when things are going bad. This is it, really. You know, you get people that can just ask maybe what they could call dummy questions, but they're not. They are really candid questions about what we do, why we do it, and maybe a different view on how it could be done.
Yeah.
And I think that's what triggers really and nurtures that that constant innovation, constant improvement also, that we really should look at in any organization at all.
Yeah. So, Simon, I want to kind of this last section, it's a brief, but it's personal, kind of some personal reflections. So if you tell me briefly how... You know, what's one success habit that helped you to reach the position you are in today, you know, leading such function, having this challenging role in the organization? What helped you?
Mm-hmm. I think any success in that respect should be really bound on a few things, like the content you give. I mean, without content, there isn't much really... So content is fundamental. With that comes credibility, and just to round it all is the personality. You know, be kind to others is really something that should exist even more in the corporate world.
Oh yeah.
Changing is not something forceful. It's really meant to be full of empathy and reflecting on, you know, how is that affecting people. What do they gain from that, even at a very individual level? And I think, you know, we talked about stakeholder management in that respect. I think this is a key to make it all possible and effective.
Mm.
Being nice to people is always a good way, you know, to get them on board. And it's not just pretending to be nice. It has to be selfless and genuinely interested in others and understanding what challenges they face and trying to solve that.
I'd
like to think myself as someone with a lot of empathy. And when I try to change an organization, I try to understand then why we would need to change that and how a change might affect someone negatively. And how we can just make sure that this is understood and smooth and helpful eventually.
I mean, just listening to you, what you said, it reminds me of one quote which I really like. It says, "It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice."
Good one. That's a good one.
So, how did you keep learning throughout the years?
Oh, yeah. Well, learning is really a journey, so you're never done really with that. There are a lot of ways to keep that up. Obviously, there is literature. There are some classes available now, great ones actually online. There's still more formal education as well. Whether it's within an organization where typically there is a learning campus internally, Siemens is a great one with a lot of really good content there. I went through an MBA, which is also a more formal type of education, good learning, good people to talk to also, and the learning continues. Reading books always, and I'm very hungry for that. And it's insatiable, really. And then you learn on the job. Right?
Yeah, of course.
And you need to be able to learn on the job.
Yeah.
What I like now, Siemens is really promoting this growth mindset of really keeping learning forever and every time when possible. And I think this is something that you know everyone should really commit to, even just at the individual level. The learning is fantastic. The different views on things and different possibilities that happen are extreme.
Yeah. And it's a mindset also, like being a lifelong learner. And today's environment, it's a must, because within a few years, like things are moving so fast, whatever we know is not enough to do the work that we need to do. And what advice do you have for leaders?
Yeah, that's, I mean, humbled me to give advice to leaders.
Yeah.
I mean, this part of keeping the learning always, this is, it has to be fundamental at an individual level, but at an organizational level as well. And maybe having that openness to younger people, and again, younger by age, but also by seniority in the organization or coming from another place, is just essential. You know, we are sometimes too keen on having people that are mini-me's and that think alike. This is not the way to challenge things and to make things better. So any leader should really try to get new people on board and help them grow. This is so rewarding, by the way. I guess that's what I could bring. Maybe we can talk again in some years if we had and then I may have some better lessons yet again.
But what about for young leaders, like younger leaders who want to move up in the organization? And what advice do you have for them?
Yeah, oh, that's actually a good one. Thank you for being specific here. Because I do think, and talking to young people, I have a few mentees in the organization as well, and I see this struggle coming over and over again. There's a massive pressure, I would call it social pressure, that somehow defines success. You know, and success means having what, a large team, a large business, a P&L, and people responsibility, and you name it. And I think there is just more than that, really. And obviously, success should be defined by every individual, not because of what the society think or even the corporate world think success is, but about what they feel they want to achieve and what matters to them. So I would just encourage anyone who wants to be a leader to really think about leading, not just because of having a title, but leading in mind, so being a thought leader and a people leader before being maybe a business leader.
Right. And my last question to you is, what's the legacy that you would like to leave behind?
Yeah, well, if we talk about those changes that that we were mentioning before in agility and portfolio management, I would just love for the journey to continue and to continue on that path which is given, but not just applying what has been paved so far, but yeah, really continuing exploring more. I like to think that what I'm doing matters and that the changes that we're operating would last and help the organization be better, help people be better, help customers be served better. That's all I can say, that the impact lasts, if you wish.
Yeah. This has been great. I'm very grateful for having you with us, Simon, today.
Thank you.
I think that your perspective on this work, on driving change, driving transformation, involving people, taking care of this human aspect is key, and it's so much needed today. And seeing you driving this with this mindset, with the skill set that you developed, and with this insight that you shared with us, I'm sure they inspired and they will inspire a lot of the people who listen to this podcast. So, and this is actually what the mission of this podcast is about, is the human aspect of the organization, taking care of it, not just for the sake of being nice, but it just makes sense. It's great for the business. It's great for society. It's great for the people. And that's why we need to develop more our again, mindset and skill set to be able to take care of that big part of the organization, the most important part of the organization, at least the way I see it. So thank you so much. And we need to continue the conversation maybe offline together, because for me, it's I'm even more curious to know and learn about a lot of things from you. And for all our listeners, thank you so much for checking this episode. If you haven't subscribed, please do so. And if you haven't left a comment or rated the podcast, if you like it, please give us a rating. I would be very grateful for that. And until the next episode, please, please, please stay inspired and make the biggest impact you can make on your business and on your people. Take care.